I put that thing down.
Yeah.
This one doesn't ever
happen. Yesterday we started the topic of Dina Chusadina. We mentioned that there are five different categories of issues that are based on Dina Chusadina. The first we mentioned was that the government has the right to charge taxes. In Shulchan Aruch they have a comment. This is only if the taxation is fair. If there's discrimination in taxes, let's say they charge more taxes to the Jews than the non-Jews. They charge more taxes to doctors and to lawyers, or more taxes to lawyers than to doctors. They discriminate against a certain faction of the population. So then if the laws of taxation are not fair, then it's called Chamsanusa de Malchusa. It's called Gazlanusa de Malchusa. That's not called Dina de Malchusa. That's what the Gdolim said under the communists. That whatever the communists did was all big zela. Everything was totally unfair. And there was Andin and Machus Adin over there. The Mishnah in the end of Baba Kama talks about what's the din if the government confiscated my property because I owed money in taxes and then they gave it to another Jew. Is the other Jew allowed to keep it or is it considered zela by him? So the Gemara says it's not zela because the government had the right to confiscate my property for the taxes. So it's din and Machus Adin. So it's fair. So then they have a right to give it to someone else. So that was the shaila under the communists. If the communists confiscated my property, then they gave it to another Jew, was he allowed to keep that or not? So the Gdolim under the communists said that everything the communists did was totally unfair. Everything was chamsanusa de malchusa, nothing was dina de malchusa. There were those who claim in America that Dina de Machusa, the law is unfair because the government, the State Department always favors the Arabs. Why is it unfair? If I would be a Nachri, I would also favor the Arabs. You get the oil from the Arabs, you don't get it from the Jews. So every country has to make up its mind. Who are their friends and who are their more important nations? They have a right to discriminate against the State of Israel. If all the oil comes from the Arabs, they have a right to support the Arabs. That's, if you don't like it, so go move to a different country. That's no reason why you're not allowed to, why you should be allowed to cheat on taxes, because the government, the taxes are fair. Taxes are fair, are more fair than any other country in the history of the world. It's the biggest democracy, greatest democracy they ever had in the world, is America. So to say that you're not muhif to pay tax because the State Department is going to favor the Arabs, that's ridiculous. Anyway, so we spoke about the first level of Dina Machusa with respect to taxes, second level with respect to Kesef, declaring something as Kesef as opposed to Shove Kesef. Tiv and Pera, the Gemara, the first daf in Perek Azov, divides everything in the world between Tiv and Pera. The third principle was that Dina Machusa applies, the government has the right to introduce a whole legal system, how to govern issues Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. So we mentioned yesterday that it says in Shulchan Aruch, the Tshuvas HaRashbo says that this only applies when at least one of the parties involved is a non-Jew. If both the Taveh and the Nitva, all the parties involved are Jewish, then the Dinam Machusa doesn't apply. Then we apply the Dinam from the Talmud, from the Choshe Mishpat. We apply our halachas. That was the Tshuva that the Maharit Sahalon, there were two Rabbanim, both Sfardish Rabbanim lived about the same time. They're both called Maharitats. One was the Maharit, Rabbi Yontif Tzahalon. He was the young Talmud Chacham who gave his tshuva about the Chalitza story, and he was the one who was recorded. He was sent by the Rabbanim Mitzvah to communicate to all the Jews who lived in the neighboring Arab communities, neighboring Arab countries, that they shouldn't rely, they have no right to rely on Din and the Machusa with respect to Yerusha, because all the parties involved are Jewish. There happened to be another Poisek at the same time, known as Maharitatz. He was a different name. Rabbi Yosef Taitatzak. He was the Rav in Constantinople. He also wrote a couple of famous. He wrote a volume of Shalosh Tshuva. Some of them are pretty famous. But they're two different people with the same Rosh Yetevis, Maharitatz. So the the klal is that the government has the right to introduce a system of law. It only applies when at least one of the parties involved is Jewish. And then we mentioned yesterday the Shach had two exceptions to the rule. And the Chazon Ish said one of them is non-existent. Shach said whenever the halacha has nothing to say, then we do follow Dina Machusa. So the Chazon Ish said, what do you mean the halacha has nothing to say? Halacha has something to say about every case under the sun. And then the other case, the other exception to the rule that the Shach said, that he quoted from the Mordechai, that if the minhag hamdina is that people follow dina d'machusa because he deal in business to Jews and non-Jews alike, so the minhag became that everybody follows dina d'machusa. So whatever is the minhag is considered kilu hisnu. And if I enter into an agreement with someone, I sell you some merchandise, or I work for you, I agree to work for you, and you agree to pay me a salary. So, masna mashakas avatar b'davish b'mammon is tenoy kain. Any tenoy you want to make with respect to dini mammon is valid. Masna mashakas avatar tenoy batal is only in the area of isavet, and dini mammon is any tenoy is good. So whatever is the dina the machusa becomes the minigam dina usually. The minigam dina is binding because that's considered kila hisnu. So the Chazon Ish writes in such a case, that becomes the dina Torah. If the two parties involved made a tenai in advance, we're entering into a contractual agreement on the understanding that we're not going to follow dina Torah, we're going to follow secular law. So then it becomes binding min Torah. Whatever you make a tenai, it's binding min Torah. Chazon Ish goes a little further and he discusses what happens if there was a court there was a case between two Jews, and instead of going to the din Torah, they went to secular court. They violated the avera of going to Arkoyas. That's an Iser. People make a mistake. They think dina machus dina. Therefore, you're obligated to go to secular court. You're not allowed to go to Jewish court. That's not only not correct, it's absolutely wrong. You're not allowed to go to secular court. Sometimes you have to go to Jewish Bezdin, and the Bezdin has to paskin according to the secular law. If that's the minhag hamdina that everybody follows, dina d'machusa, then you have to go to a Bezdin, there's an Iser HaKoyes, and the Bezdin has to paskin according to the secular law. But you're not permitted to go to HaKoyes. So let's say there's a case between two Jews, and they went to secular court. Let's say one of them wanted to go, the other one didn't want to go, so they went to secular court, and the court paskin in favor of one. So, and it's not in accordance with the Jewish law. According to Jewish law, the person who won the court case is not entitled to the money. So the Chazon Ish writes in the Sefer Choshim Mishpat that Dina Machus Adina applies in such a case. The court paskened already on this particular case. They came to the judge and the judge said, Ish ploni ata chai, ish ploni ata zakai. So just like we have a din, that hefker bezn hefker, bezn has a right to declare my mom and hefker, they have a right to take my money away, give it to someone else if they have a good cause. So dina d'machus adin also, the judge in the secular court has the right, he has two Jews, and they came to him, he didn't force them, they came to him, and the judge decided you owe him $5 million. So the judge paskin, so now it became binding. Chazon Ish just says that if later on the one who lost in court will want to go to a Bezdin and he'll complain that that wasn't fair, that the other guy took me to secular court and he violated the Iser, so the Bezdin may decide to penalize the Shegit who went to secular court, may decide to punish him and be just like the judge had a right to be mafkir the mammon, so the Dayan also has a right to be mafkir the mammon away. So the psak of the judge is binding now. The judge said you owe him $5 million, even though it doesn't correspond to the halacha. So just like by us, hefke bezn hefke, bezn can create a new schus and mammon shaloi kedin. So the secular judge can also do the same thing. So now he just declared you owe him $5 million, and if the bezn will decide later on that it wasn't right, let's say they both said let's go to court. Nope, not that one pressure, not that the tovei pressure the nitva to go to secular court. And the Nitva didn't want to go. They both said, let's go to secular court. And then he's a sore loser. After the judge says you have to pay him $5 million, he says, I don't like the psak of the judge. Let's go to the Bezin. And the Bezin is going to pass. And so the Bezin is not going to reverse the psak. You're both shkotzim. You both should not have gone to secular court. So the other guy will say, but he's a ganav. He's taking $5 million, not entitled to. He is entitled to. Once the judge passes on your particular case, dina d'machusa doesn't apply when both parties are Jewish, means the abstract dina d'machusa doesn't apply. But if he went to court and the judge passed on yechayiv, he just created the chiyuv. Now you owe the money. So if the Bezin will decide that it wasn't right on your part, the other guy was screaming, I want to go to Bezin. The Taver said, I want to go to court. And he took him to court, like it did. So the Bezin will have the right, if they choose to be mafkia, the schus mammon that the judge gave you.
What should the person do if both parties are Jewish and one side wants to be found on the secular court, but the other one wants to follow the halacha and doesn't want to go to the secular court?
So he can't do anything. What if he forces me to go, I mean the Taver wants to go to court.
Either party, whatever.
No, if the Tadeh...
All right, fine, so the Tadeh wants, right.
Tadeh wants to go to court, so what can he do? He has no choice, he has to go to court. This halacha that you're not allowed to go to court, not allowed to go to secular court, is only if both parties are Jewish. If one party is Jewish, one party is a non-Jew, you're permitted to go to court. And Mishkan is Yankev has a humorous tshuva. There was a Jew who was a crook who sold the ship to a non-Jew, and he charged him five times as much as the ship was worth. And the non-Jew didn't realize that he overcharged him. So the guy made a kinyan on the boat. Then, before he paid the money, so he asked around, and he found out the Jew was cheating him. It was worth one-fifth of that amount. So he said, I'm not going to pay the full amount. So the Jew said, you made the kinyan, you mechuyev to pay. So he says, no. So the guy said, let's go to court. So the Jew said, I'm not allowed to go to court. I'm an Orthodox, not allowed, not allowed to go to court. A case between a Jew and a non-Jew, of course you're allowed to go to court. So the guy said, I'll go to any bezdin. He said, I have to go to a rabbi. I'll go to any bezdin. Agree. Which bezdin in the world will say the guy has to pay him five times as much as the boat is worth? So they went to the local bezdin. Local bezdin said, Eino noala akum, there's no dinamai noa for a guy. So the guy has to pay all the money. So the guy said, I can't believe it. That's what the rabbi said. Is there a higher court of appeals? So they said, yeah, you can send the shaila to the Mishkan as Yankiv. He was a bigger rabbi. There's no system of appeals. Not sure. So they sent the shaila to the Mishkan as Yankiv. So he writes, that's ridiculous. The psak that the bezdin gave is ridiculous. The aloha, Eino noala akum, there are two dinim of Ainoa. There's an Iser Ainoa and then there's a penalty of Ainoa. Someone mentioned yesterday, and the girl was saying what it says in the Chumash. It says, Kisim Kermim Pamasach Al Tonu Isha Sochi. You're not allowed to cheat each other in business. So the original Pasuk in Chumash is talking about when you sell Karka in Eretz Yisrael. Because if it's 5 years till the Shemitah, 5 years till the Yovel, so the Lokech is not going to keep the field forever. He's just going to have it for the next 5 years. Then you have to give it back, so it's worth much less. If you sell a field in the beginning of the 49 years of the Yovel cycle, so the Lekech is going to have the Sodeh for 49 years. They're selling it 5 years to go. It's only going to have the use of the field for the next 5 years. So the Chumash says, when you sell a field in Eretz Yisrael, it's going to go back, when it comes Shnas HaYovel, it's going to go back to the original owner, so you have to charge accordingly. So the Ramban and Chumash asks Akasha, all the Rishonim ask Akasha, how could the Tanoim learn out from the Pasuk? It's only talking Dobran Nikta Miyad Liyad. It's only talking about Metaltalim, and Karka is not subject to the laws of Ainoa. How can you say that? The original Pasuk in the Chumash is talking about Ainoa by Karkoas. So all the Rishonim ask that. So the Ramban of Chumash says, Ramban is a little cryptic, so the Menchas Chinuch has in a full paragraph. Menchas Chinuch explains it, he schmaltzes it up, but the Ramban says it bekitzer. So the Menchas Chinuch schmaltzes up the answer. He says, the rabbis read in between the lines that there are two parts to the parasha of Ainoa. One is the Iser of Ainoa, and one is that there's a penalty. The penalty doesn't say at all. The Mishnah says, if I sold something to you and I overcharged you, so if I overcharged you, Pachas Mishtus, you assume it's Mechila, so you don't get the money back. If I overcharged you exactly Shtus, Akona, Machzor Ainoa, I'm obligated to reimburse you the amount that I cheated you. And if I overcharged you, yes, and Mishtus, then you have the right to back out from the whole deal. You would not only do you want the amount that I cheated you back, you don't want to do business with me. You want to get back the merchandise, you want to go shop by someone else. You don't want to deal with me at all. So the Ramban asks, where did the rabbi see this in the Chumash, that there's a penalty of Ainoa? It just says there's an Avera. Who says that there's a penalty? So he says, from the fact that we read in between the lines, Akona miyad, amisecha dobar nikna miyad liyad, that the din of Ainoa only applies to the Metaltalim, doesn't apply to Karka, and that's against the whole parsha in the Chumash. The whole parsha in the Chumash is talking about Ainoa by Karkoes. So how can it be? So the Ramban says, that's why the rabbis read that there are two parts to the din of Ainoa. One is the prohibition. The prohibition even applies to Karka and to Hegdish. It says, Simkem la misecha, kona miyara misecha, la misecha prat la hegdish. There's no din of Ainoa by hegdish. You mean you're allowed to cheat hegdish? Hegdish has to buy, they need a table and a chair. So I can charge him whatever I want. I can charge 100 times worth the value of the thing. If you cheat hegdish, it's het gomer. That's ridiculous. Obviously, there's an averi, you're not allowed to cheat hegdish. But yeah, but if you cheat the hegdish, ain't no la hegdish. There's no din of Ainoa. But l'chatchila, for sure it's also to cheat hegdish. So that's what the Ramban says, and the Mishkan Asyanki quotes this. So he said, the same is true regarding Akum. The Gemara says in Mechoris on Daf Yud Gimel, that's the first Daf in the second parak in Mechoris. So the Gemara says, La Misecha, to a fellow Jew, ata machzer oino, v'yata machzer oino la'akum. So the Lashon HaGemara is not that you're allowed to cheat a Nochri. It says, La Misech Ata Machzer Eino. The miut of a Misech of Prat La'akum is like the miut of Hegdish, and it's like the miut of Karka. It's only this mind from the penalty. There's no Knasav Eino, but the Yisra Eino certainly is there. So the Mishkan Es Yankim says, the Nochri didn't pay yet. So to make the Nochri pay, of course that's an Yisra Eino. To make him pay five times the true value of the thing, of course it's an Yisra Eino. If the Nochri would have paid already, and then he would want to be reimbursed, and then you say there's no penalty by Noah by an Akum. But if he didn't pay yet, of course there's an Isra in Noah. Then he adds on, and who's in, then the Mishkan Es Yankev adds on, the end of the Chuban, who's in violation of the Isra in Noah? The Jew who sold the boat, and the Bezin who paskin wrong. He said if the Bezin is going to enforce the Ipsak, that they're going to pressure the goy to pay five times the value, the Bezin who paskin falsely is in violation of the Isra in Noah. They're cheating the goy, they're making him pay five times the true value. The Rashash has the same. The Rashash lived about the same time, a little after. The Rashash on Pchoris has the same comment on that Loshen Agamora. La Misecha Atamachzer Aino, the Atamachzer Aino La Akum, that Akum is only Nismite from the penalty of Aino, it's never Nismite from the Isra of Aino. Dina de Machusa, the abstract laws apply to any case where at least one of the parties involved is a non-Jew. So you're supposed to paskin based on Goyish law. If the two Jews went to secular court, which they weren't permitted to do, if you went to secular court, let's say if one of them doesn't want to go to a din Torah, so let's say I want to sue someone else, I want to go to din Torah, he doesn't want to go to din Torah, he's not religious, he doesn't want to go to din Torah. So I can get permission from the Bezdin to go to Goyish court. It's not that the Bezdin has the authority to, like the Pope has authority to be matter all kinds of Isurim. But yes, the Bezdin doesn't have the power to be. It's not sometimes a Yeshkach Yachachamim, Lakadom and Ator Bekum Yasei. Sometimes Lahayro Ashor, the Migda Mils, the Bezdin has a right to tell you you can violate an Isur. Here it's not Yeshkach Laka Bekum Yasei. When the Nitva does want to go to Din Torah, so the Bezdin gives me permission to go to secular court, it's not because the Bezdin gave permission. You don't need Bezdin to give permission. It's the halacha only says when you have an option of going to a din Torah to get your money or going to a secular court, so it's not permissible to go to Goyish court. You go to a din Torah. If you, for some reason or another, there is no local Bezdin, or the Bezdin has no authority, the guy's just not going to listen to the Bezdin. He's not religious. He doesn't want to listen to the Bezdin. So if you have no choice, then the Bezdin gives you permission, but it's not the how to give you permission. It's not a like a papal dispensation. The Pope can be matter all kinds of Isur. It's not that the Bezdin is matter and Isur here. It's a Igloi Muslim affair. There is no Isur. If the only way for me to get an honest judgment is by going to secular court. So Mamela, the Bezdin will say, it's permissible for you to go to secular court. Not that you need a Maisa Bezdin, a Psak. So let's say if the Jew took another Jew to secular court, he violated the din of Arkois. But if Lamaisa, if the judge paskin on their case, so the psak of the judge is binding. Just like by us, a hefke bezna hefke, so by them. If the judge paskin, the court paskin, that you owe him $1 million, got to pay the money. Then the Chazanish writes, if the Bezdin will feel later on that it wasn't right on his part to go to secular court, may decide to penalize him, may decide not to penalize him. That's what they have to decide later. So the Chazanish continues to explain. This is all based on a Rabbeinu Yoyin and Baba Basra. So the Chazanish continues to explain. There is a Gemara in the first Perek in Gittin where the Mishnah speaks about Kol Hashtoros Oilem Ba'Koyah Shal Nochrim. One Jew is selling a field to another Jew, both parties are Jewish, and they sold the field Aidei Mechira Kinyan Shtar, and the Shtar was drawn up by non-Jews. The whole Shtar was written by the Goyish court. Hashtoros Oilem Ba'Koyah Shal Nochrim. So the Gemara has a machlokes hamaroim, is the other Jew koine the karka based on dina de machlus adina or not? So the Rabbeinu Yoyin and Baba Basra talks about how can you apply dina de machlus adina? Both parties involved are Jewish. That's given. The Rashba and the Maritza Halon and everybody assumes like that. Dina de machlus adina only applies when at least one of the parties involved is a non-Jew. How can there be one opinion in the first Perek in Gittin that if I sold the field to another Jew, Ayidei shtar ha'ole ba'akor shel nochem, a shtar that's signed by non-Jews. How can that be that that's kosher? Based on dina machus adina. So the Chazon Ish explains, if we would have had a dispute and we, both of us, both Jews, submitted the dispute to the secular court and the court of Kepaskin, even though it was an avera to go to court, and the judge Paskin according to the secular law, not according to Jewish law, everything was cockeyed, everything was wrong, but still the judge of Kepaskin said, if he Paskin on my case, I have to give you the $5 million. But here we're talking, not that we submitted a case to the judge to Paskin, we went to the judge in the court and he should draw up the document. So it wasn't the psak of the goyish judge. He drew up a document. So that's one opinion in the Gemara. The Gemara has a machloek hamarayim. Is that the equivalent of having the goyish judge in the goyish court paskin on my case? And just if the goyish judge would have paskin based on chukei hamedina, dinan machusa would apply just like hefker bezna hefker. So then I would owe you the $5 million. So they say no. Here we didn't submit the case for adjudication. We just went, two Jews went to the judge and said, I want to sell them the field. So the judge says, fine, I'll draw up the documents for you. And he draws up the document, has non-Jews sign it. So that's the machloikas amaroim. Is that the, if you have shtar ho'ila be'akor shel nochem, is that the equivalent of having a court decision on the case? But he say, no, there was no court decision. The court drew up a document based on kinyonim. So kinyonim b'nei noach are not good for us. If the goyim sign the shtar, that's no good. So that's the machloikas, that's what the Chazon Ish explains. That's the machlokes in the Gemara. Oh, yesterday, I want to come. Yesterday, the last professor in Bar Ilan was talking, he gave a very interesting talk. So part of what he mentioned was, is it fair to charge higher taxes to the wealthier people? Let's say one guy makes $5 million a year, the other guy makes $100,000 a year. So it's fair, that's called graduated taxes, to charge more money to the people that make more money. So the Rab Zevin has an essay about that, one of his Sorim. He points out that it's based on a Mishnah Peya. We assume that that is fair. If the government discriminates against a class of the government, let's say, in charging taxes, they charge more taxes to the Jews, or they charge more taxes to doctors as opposed to lawyers, because they don't like doctors, and they don't like Indian chief, whatever. So if they discriminate in charging the taxes, then the taxes are considered chamsanus of the malchusa, and it's not binding. What happens if they discriminate against the wealthy? Is that called discrimination? Like you said yesterday, whatever you make over $1 million, they charge you 60% tax. Whatever you make less than $1 million, they charge you 40% tax. Whatever. Whatever you make less than $100,000, they charge you 20% tax. So that the poskim say that that is considered fair. That's not considered chamsanus of the malchusa. Okay. Then the fourth category in Din of the Malchusa is if the government introduced the takanim b'nei tikkun hamdina. Let's say in America they have the laws, minimum wages. You have to pay a worker a minimum amount of money per hour. And let's say you have rent. They used to have rent control in New York City. There's still some buildings that are still under rent control. Or yesterday in the Sanhedrin, we were listening to the children who were talking that on certain necessities, like on milk and cheese and orange juice and whatever, not talking about candy, I'm not talking about toys. Toys and candy, you can charge whatever you want. You can live without the toys, you can live without the candy. But there are certain necessities in life, the cheese and milk and butter and so on, that the government sometimes has, some countries have regulations, you're not allowed to charge more than a certain amount, you're not allowed to rip off the public. So what happens if the Moichu and the Lakeach are all Jewish? So years ago in New York, we used to have such a situation. There were landlords that would always be mock Jewish landlords, who would always be careful only to rent to Jews. And they said, the Din Machusa doesn't apply because all the parties involved are Jewish. And they would rip them off. They would charge a fortune of money. There were Jewish businessmen, Jewish shop owners, who would hire Dafke Jews, and they wouldn't pay them the minimum wages. Because they said, the Din Machusa doesn't apply whenever all the parties involved are Jewish. So Rav Henkin, at the time, 70 years ago, wrote a tshuva about this, 80 years ago, wrote a tshuva about this, that that's not correct. Whenever the government makes a takana l'tikkun hamdina in order to prevent people from ripping each other off, so then dina machlusa doesn't apply, even though all the parties involved are Jewish. Just the system of law, the chukim and mishpatim, we have a whole set of Chosh Mishpat, and the Yom have different laws, and their laws don't apply to us. But if the government made a takana l'tikan hamdina, l'tovis hamdina, so that's binding even if all the parties involved are Jewish. It's relevant halacha l'maisa also b'negiah to bankruptcy. The halacha has no such thing as bankruptcy, but the government makes such a takana that, and we assume it's a fair law, that if a person made a mistake in business, and he'll be ruined for the rest of his life, he'll never be able to make a parnasa, any penny that he's going to earn. He has to pay off the original Baal Chayv. So they made a takana l'tikan hamdina, that if a person is really up kahak the tzaris, he can declare bankruptcy, and all of the chayvus are cancelled. So even though I owe money to all the other Jews, and there is no halacha about bankruptcy, it doesn't appear anywhere in Shulchan Aruch, so still, since the government made it l'tikan hamdina, so the pashtus is that it applies even in between the two Jews. So then there is a Tosefta. Tosefta speaks about Reife Shekilkel, medical malpractice. If the doctor treated the patient the way the standard procedure, but it turns out afterwards that the standard procedure was an error, so then the Aruch HaShulchan writes that's not called medical malpractice. That was the standard. If you look back, the way they treated any given machla that you have, so the way they treated it 5 years ago looks like it's barbaric. It looks like some voodoo medicine from the African jungles. Whenever doctors look back in retrospect, how they treated patients with the exact same machla 5 years ago, it looks like a joke. How could they have ever thought that that's going to cure the patient? It's utterly ridiculous. But 5 years ago, they thought that that was on the cutting edge of medicine. That was considered the best way to treat. So if the doctor treated the patient the way it's mukubal, and he was up on the latest information, and 5 years later they changed it, so you can't sue him for medical malpractice. That was considered, that's the halacha. Nitin rishus l'reifel l'rapis, even if the medical profession is wrong, and the practice of the surgery that they're going to do is not going to be helpful, that's halacha. The doctors have the right to treat the patients. They're permitted and obligated to treat the patients according to the latest knowledge of medicine. But let's say the doctor was not up on the latest developments in medicine, and he treated the patient the way they did 10 years ago, 5 years ago, and he didn't realize that they changed it already. They say that that's not going to help. So that's not considered medical malpractice. So what's the din of medical malpractice? So there are three Toseftas that contradict each other. Two are in Bava Kamma, one is in Gittin. So in Bava Kamma, one says Chayiv and one says Potter, two different prokim. One is in the second Perek Bava Kamma, one is in Perek Achayiv in Bava Kamma. So one Tosefta says Chayiv, one says Potter. And the third Tosefta in Gittin says Potter Medina Arab, Chayiv Medina Shammai. Yes, no, maybe. Well, the three logical possibilities. So what's going on? A triple stira. So the Or Sameach gives you the teretz to what's going on. So he says, the doctor who harmed the patient by treating him improperly, he didn't do the procedure that he was supposed to do. So the din is adam wadli oilam there's nezik tzari b'shevis and b'shevis. So b'shevis for sure he doesn't pay. B'shevis he only paid, the Gemara says, if niskaven levayesh, or at least niskaven lahazik. But if the doctor meant the toivosa of the patient, so b'shevis is out of the question, you don't pay. Shaila is a nezik he pay, even b'oinus. So the earlier Tosefta and the end of the second parak of Bava Kamma, when the Mishnah says, it says, if the doctor mistreated the patient, he's chayif, period. That goes on Nezik. The later Tosefta that says, he's potter, that goes not only on Boshes, it goes on Tzarip, Bishevis, also potter, because the Gemara says, you only chayif Tzarip, Bishevis. The three different categories. Nezik yechai be mshagik be mmezik. Boishas you only chai if niskaven lahazik on niskaven lachvol. And the other three, tzari b'sheves, you only chai if there was some degree of negligence, if it was boinus not. So in the doctor's case, we assume there was no degree of negligence, so he's potter. Then the third Tosefta in Gittin, it says, potter medina yadim, chai medina shamayim. If you look in the context, that's talking about a special case. The Tanoim were faced with the same problem that the doctors are facing today. that because of all, when was it, 30 years ago, when there were so many suits, lawsuits against doctors about the malpractice, so a lot of doctors left the field of medicine. They don't want to practice medicine. I had a Talmud of mine who was a doctor, and then he left medicine. He eked out a living as a doctor. He was never too wealthy. Then he left medicine. He was afraid they're going to sue him. So he went into medical supplies. He sells medical supplies. Now he's a wealthy balabas. Now he's a very rich man. He's richer now than he was when he was a doctor. So I don't know how good a doctor he was, but the Tanoim were concerned, and now the doctors are concerned, that very good doctors will leave the field of medicine because they'll be afraid that they may make a mistake, and then they'll sue them, and then they'll be ruined for the rest of their life. So in order to encourage good surgeons to stay in the field, so the Chachamim came up, the Tanoim came up with this idea that they should declare Hefker Bezna Hefker, that in Tov Lo Yishalmu, if they made a mistake and they harmed the patient, we relieve him from paying. If he's mazik a patient b'mezid, so he's still chai. But if he's mazik b'shoigig, even though the din says odem od li'olam b'mishoigig b'mezid, as far as mezik is concerned, but the bezin declared hefke bezin hefke to encourage good doctors to stay in the field, so they gave them a p'tur. So that's a p'tur l'tikan amdina, to encourage the good doctors to stay in the field. The same thing a dayan who paskin an era on a din Torah. So the Mishnah says in Bchoris that he's chayv to pay. A dayan timi es hatohar, or tiher es hatomei, or chiyav es hazakai, b'zika es hachayev, and he gave a mistake in psak, and it's irreversible. So then the Mishnah says the dayan shatohar is chayv to pay. So dayanim will, big, good, crackerjack dayanim, will run away from paskin and din Torah. They'd rather give a shir. No one can sue me if I give a shir, if I make a mistake in shir. So I'll back out tomorrow. They're not going to sue me. If I make a mistake in the Din Torah, they'll make me pay from my pocket. So I'll be afraid to go into Dine Torah. So I'll go give a pilpul shir, I'll publish kisviyat, I'll go to a different field of rabbinics rather than do Dine Torah. So what's going to be? The people who are going to do Dine Torah are going to be the Shvacha guys. The good guys will realize they may make a mistake. The Shvacha guys think they know everything. The good guys know that they don't know everything. So they'll run away from it. So to encourage the good doctors to stay in medicine, to encourage the big Talmid Chacham to stay in the field of Dayanis, so they made a p'tur. This is quoted in the same Tosefta. You have a series of Mishnayis in the middle of Gittin, goes on and on and on and on. Takonis b'mnei tikkun ha'olam. Starts from the third parak in Gittin, then it goes parak ha'nezakin. You have one Mishnah after the other, then the Tosefta adds on more and more cases of tikkun ha'olam. So the Tosefta has these two takanas b'mnei tikkun ha'olam, that if a dayan shetoa, mi'ikar adin he has to pay, b'mnei tikkun ha'olam, if he has rishus from bezin, if they give him a certificate, so then he doesn't have to pay, tolo yishalmu. And the doctor, mi'ikar adin, the doctor who harmed the patient, mi'ikar adin has to pay nezek, and b'mnei tikkun ha'olam, they want to encourage the doctors to stay in the field of medicine. So they patter him, if he's a good doctor, they patter him to Allah Yisham. So then the Tosefta says, but it's Chai B'din Shamai. If later on he does have enough money to pay back. So the correct thing is, whenever they made a takana to patter someone, Mikra Din is Chai to pay. And there's a takana M'tan Tikkun Olam that patters him. So B'bol Lotzah Sidei Shamai, if later on he has money, so he should pay. So the Pashto says that the same is true regarding bankruptcy. A person declares bankruptcy, so even though all the parties involved are Jewish, that's a takanim of Neitik and Oilam that the government made. The government didn't say that this is the law. It made a takanim. It was never intended as a law. It doesn't make sense. It's Neitik and Oilam that made such a takanim. So that's where Rav Henkin wrote a tshuva. The Pashtus is like Rav Henkin, that this takanim applies even if all the parties involved are Jewish. But then later on, after he declares bankruptcy, if later on he comes into he gets enough money to pay up all of the Balei Chayvos. He should pay all the Balei Chayvos. Then there's also a Tosfos in Gittin about the Mishnayos have a series of takanas from Pnei Tikkun Ha'olam. So it had the following situation. A man sends a shliach to deliver a get to his wife. Husband lives in Arizona, the wife lives in Los Angeles. So shliach, the man is going anyway to Los Angeles. I give him the get, he should divorce my wife. As the shliach is, till the shliach gets there, takes a week, takes 2 weeks, he's stopping off in New York, taking care of business, he's going to go to Los Angeles. Until he goes there, the husband changes his mind, and he backs out. So today you have telephones, you have email, so you can notify him. Let's say years ago there was no way to notify the shliach that you should not deliver the get. So the husband tells all the people in Yerushalayim, oh, I don't want him to give the get. I back out from the shlichas. But he never notified the shliach. He never notified the wife, so they don't know. So the shliach goes and he gives a get to the wife. The wife's going to go remarry. How is she supposed to know that the husband backed out from the mini ha-shlichas? So they made a takana de rabbana that the husband is not allowed to back out from the mini ha-shlichas. What if he did back out? What if he did back out? He's not allowed to. What if he goes and he does back out? So the get is no good. She's going to remarry. The children are going to be mamzer. So they made a takana de rabbana. We say the get is good. How can the get be good? But it's no good. So we declare that the first husband's marriage was never valid, and the woman is permitted to remarry the second husband. Showing the children are not mamzer. So Tosfos says, so what happens if my wife remarried without a get? And I like my wife, and I don't want her children from the second husband to be mamzer. So I can pull the shtick. I'll give a get to a shliach and tell a shliach, go deliver the get to my wife, and then I'll be mevat to the get shalav b'fnei shliach, and then he'll deliver the get. So I made Yechol Mamzerim Toher. The Bezin will declare that she was never married to me in the first place, and therefore the children from the second husband will not be Mamzerim. How can that be? So Taisus gives two answers. The one answer is Anachanami, Yechol Mamzerim Toher. If you pull that shtick, you can do it. That was part of what Rabbi Gorin wrote in his tshuva. They should use the Marsham once that did that. Mamzerim were born from the second husband, so the Marsham said they should send a get like the shliach. So that's not the accepted opinion. The accepted opinion is the other answer that Tosfos gives, namely, that this takanim from Hatikon Ha'olam was only introduced if it was Nebuch HaRachmanus on the woman. The husband sent the get, and then by mistake, the husband was Mabatel HaGet Shalav Nefnei HaShliach. But if the whole thing was in order to be matter the mamzerim, so then the takanim if they take it on them doesn't apply. So the same thing by bankruptcy. Let's say there are people who have declared bankruptcy five times. They go into business and they owe a lot of money, so they hide all of their assets, they put all their assets in the wife's name or whatever, they hide it away somewhere, and then they declare bankruptcy and then they start all over again and they pull the same shtick next time. So that's according to what Tosfos says, whenever the Bezdin makes a takana with Netikin Ha'olam, if someone is abusing the system and he's using a takana, he's not using a real law, he's using a takana that was made for the purpose of Tikin Ha'olam, and in his case there was no Shas HaTak, he had no right to do it, he's just hiding his assets. So then the accepted opinion is that the takana from Tikin Ha'olam simply doesn't apply in that case. Yeah.
What would be the condition that was never common in the first place? What happened to her, like, say, she gets from the first marriage, what their stats been?
Nothing, like a single boy had children from a single girl.
Just get like wedlock.
Yeah. Okay. They're not thumbs there. You had a wedlock. Yeah.
The one that, like, happened to Tshuva on that, Tila? To Tshuva on now, therefore having the Ila and all that with.
Okay, maybe he has to do tshuva, but it was B'shege Gomer. At the time they were living together, they thought that they were married. I don't even know if you have to do tshuva. If they thought they were married, so there probably wasn't even an Isar Bias Nus. They weren't together L'shem Nus. They were together L'shem Ishus. And the Bezin undid their marriage. They did not do it. Yeah. So I mentioned originally that this the division, the different categories of Dina Machus Adina, this is all in a footnote in the long tshuva, the first tshuva in the Dvar Avraham. Chelek Aleph Simanal. So he has the fifth category that he has is that the Goyish government has the right to punish violators. Let's say, for a Jew to become Gesundheit, for a Jew to become a lawyer in America or in Eretz Yisrael is a big problem. He's gonna get involved in a case between two Jews, and he's gonna be using secular law here in Eretz Yisrael in America. They're gonna use secular law, so you're not allowed to. That's the Yisra Kois. So it's a major problem. But let's say for a Jew to be a criminal lawyer, or let's say to be a judge, to punish another Jew, put him in prison for averes that he did. So that's not a violation of halacha. The goyish government has the right to punish criminals, even if they're Jewish criminals, and even to punish them to a greater extent than what halacha says. The halacha says that if a person gambles, he has to pay shavus hagzel, he has to pay back, and he has to pay kafel sometimes. The din by the goyim is that benoyach is nerag al pachas mishav prutah. He's chayv the death penalty for a violation Azarasim zui misosim. If a nochri violates any one of the seven mitzvahs b'nei noach, so the din is that he deserves the death penalty. So the Gemara says that there was a Tana, Rav Shimon bar Yochai. He was the one who did the work on the Zohar, and he was the one who was in the cave with the son Rav Lozber, Rav Shimon, for all those years learning Zohar, whatever they were learning there in the cave. So what did Rav Lozber, Rav Shimon do for a living after he came out of the cave? So the Gemara says, believe it or not, he was a policeman for the Roman government. They needed someone who spoke Yiddish, because they spoke Roman. They didn't understand the Hebrew. They didn't understand. They couldn't tell who the Ganavim were by the Jews. They all looked the same. So they needed a Jew who will figure out who the Ganavim are by the Jews. So Rav Lozber, Rav Shimon was a policeman for the Roman government to arrest the Jewish Ganavim. And then the Gemara says, Rav Yossi, another Tana was also a policeman for the Roman government. So the Gemara says, Eliyahu Navi came and he said, it's not a nice job for a nice Jewish boy. Let someone else be the policeman. So he resigned. Okay, but he didn't. The Shita Mekubetzis there on Bava Metzia Daf Pei Gimel quotes from the Ritva, and we have this in the Ran and Sanhedrin, that he asks, why didn't Eliyahu Hanavi tell him that it's Mesira? You're not allowed to massa Jews to the Galatian government. So you see, there's no Issa Mesira. The Gemara says, how did Rav Lozber, Rav Shimon figure out who the Jewish Ganavim were? And they gave him the death penalty. So the Gemara says, he would look around in the cafes when they were eating breakfast, who's yawning over breakfast? So if it was someone from the program, so they got home at 12:30 at night. So of course he's half asleep over breakfast. That's no time. So he says, if it's a Talmud Chacham who's yawning, we assume he must have been learning late last night. If it's Nishkin Talmud Chacham who's yawning, what was he doing late at night? He must, if there was a Gneva in town and someone's yawning, he would assume that the one who was yawning was the one who was up all night gambling, and he would arrest him. And they would give him the death penalty based on circumstantial evidence, less than circumstantial evidence. And the Gemara says, every time he was right. Every guy whom he caught yawning, and he thought, he looked at him and he sized them up, he was always right, he was never wrong. And once in a while they would complain, what kind of evidence is that? What kind of proof is that? Those guys were guilty of more crimes. Whoever argued with him turned out he was guilty of more crimes. So the Rishonim asked, what kind of a din is that? You have a right to give a Jew the death penalty based on circumstantial evidence? And the answer is, a Jewish Bezna has no right to give a death penalty for Gneva. And you have no right to give the death penalty for the whole Shabbos or Avodah Zarah based on circumstantial evidence. But the Goyish government does have a right to give based on circumstantial evidence. And the Goyim have a right to give the death penalty to Jews. And there's no Avera for me. There's no Issa Mesira. Mesira is when you master someone Shalokidin. Real Mesira means, the original Mesira meant when the Goyish governor wants to hold up a Jew and he doesn't know who's wealthy and who's poor. He doesn't know who has money stuffed away in his mattress. All the Jews dress the same on Shabbos. They all dress nice on the weekdays. They dress the same. You can't tell who's wealthy. You look at me, you look at my landlord, we dress the same way. My landlord is a very wealthy man. So he's a Jewish guy, has the same kind of beard I have. He looks the same. So you can't tell who's wealthy and who's poor. So the Jew who's going to mass it to the government, I'm going to tell him, this Jew is wealthy. He has millions of dollars stuffed away in his mattress. So then the governor is going to come, he's going to send the police, he's going to steal the money. So that's the original din of Mesira. Mesira is when it's Shaloikidin. We have cases, Mesira, let's say a person violated a law and then they're going to put him in a state prison. So the state prisons are terrible. The state prison, you will suffer more than what it says on the books. The warden in the prison will beat you up if he doesn't like you. He'll be anti-Semitic. He'll punish you more than you deserve. They'll put you together in a cell with a Muslim who's a homosexual or whatever. The guy will make you crazy. He'll threaten to kill you. That's not what it says on the books. And books says the guy is cheated on income tax. So they should, the income tax, they put you in the federal prison. They won't put you in state prison. But people that do have errors that they put in the state prison, so usually that's a problem on Mesira. So you have to look through Shulchan Aruch. When is it mutter to do Mesira? But to send a guy to a federal prison, Glat Kosher, Daf Yomi prison, that's not Shaloi Kedin. They sit in prison for the years that they're supposed to sit. So strictly speaking, that's not really Mesira. It has nothing to do with Mesira. I remember many years ago, 40 years ago, they had all this, 30, 40 years ago, they had all the scandals with the nursing homes in America. Unfortunately, all of them were all Jewish people, all nursing homes. And then they were ripping off the government. For 20 years after the patients died, they were still charging the government bills as if the patients were still alive and they're still servicing them. So this was a tremendous scandal. And the government wanted the Jews who were working in the nursing home to testify against the Balabas, to say the facts that he was cheating all these years. So the Jews were afraid that it's Mesir, it's a Shaila Mesir. So strictly speaking, what kind of Mesir is it? It's not Mesir, he's stealing from the government, he's stealing from all the other people. He's cheating the country. So strictly speaking, is not Mesir. So I remember once they hung up in the Beis Medrash, the Kollel Beis Medrash in 301, at first tool, they hung up a psak that was from some Beis Din in Williamsburg. It had the stationery, official stationery, and it was typed that they had a psak that there was a court case between the government wants a Jew to testify against another Jew. So they wrote, as it says, and he quotes chapter and verse, the Siman and the Sif in Shulchan Aruch, where it says that you're not allowed to testify against another Jew, even though the judge singles you out and he says he knows that you know evidence, because you worked in this nursing home for 20 years. You know what was going on there. So even though the judge singles you out and he knows that you know what happened there, you're not allowed to testify because it's Mesira. So we looked up that chapter and verse, that Siman and Sif in Shulchan Aruch says just the opposite. So Befer is just the opposite. And the Vilna Gaon explains, why is it mutter? So he says it has nothing to do with Mesira because it's Kedin. Mesira is only Nisa Shaloi Kedin. Here the guy deserves to sit in prison. He's stealing millions of dollars from the government. He deserves to sit in prison. It's going to be a federal prison. It's not going to be a state prison. He's not going to be punished more than he deserves. The only issue is, in Shulchan Aruch they talk, if the Jew knows testimony in a court case between a Jew and a non-Jew, so you shouldn't testify. Why should you not testify? If it's not Mesir, why should you not testify? So it says it's called Aveda Sakum. I'm helping the non-Jew retrieve the money that's rightfully his. The Jew owes him $1 million. So if I'm going to testify, a Jew will testify in court that the non-Jew should retrieve the money that the other Jew owes him. That's called Aveda Sakum. So you're not supposed to help out Aveda Sakum. But it says in the Gemara, what if it's a Mokam Chil Hashem? So the Mechaber writes over here, if the judge knows that you know testimony and you're withholding because all the Jews cover up on each other, that's called the Chil Hashem. So the Mokam Chil Hashem, you're mechayev to do the Aveda Sakum. That's what the Bir Agro explains. That's the Pashup Shat in the Mechaber. But for sure, there's no prohibition of Mesir at all. Whenever it's Kedin, there's no Isra Mesir. This is Kedin, let's say, to testify in court that the guy's a Ganef, even though the government will put him in prison. And according to Jewish law, you don't deserve to go to prison. Just pay back the Geneva. And here they're going to make him suffer more than the Jewish law requires. That's not called Mesira. The Goyisha government has a right, and I have a right to testify in court. It's not an act of Mesira.
It could be that it's not even in Sakum, because based on what we said about tax yesterday, the whole government is a shutter.
Right. That is correct. The Shulchan Aruch is talking about a case where it's a court case between one Jew and another Jew. So that's called Aveda Sakum. In our case, not even Aveda Sakum. It's everybody's Aveda. Yeah.
How
do
you write
a Lashon
Hara, then?
Lashon Hara, if it's Latayel Eslahabo, it's Mutter. We want to stop the Geneva. The guy keeps on milking the government. He's making everybody's taxes go up. Every year he's stealing $10 million from the government. So that's not the Lashon Hara.
Based on what we saw on Beit Shemesh, could we say that Rabbi Lipman was chayiv to go to the government to tell the government what was going on? If he had a chiyuv on him?
A Jewish government. It's not a Jewish government here. What's Mesir? Mesir is the Agayishi government.
Correct. So, but was, could we say that he was chayiv to go and tell on him?
They should have. That's what they did. He did what he was mukhayiv to do. Yeah. The people in the community should have taken care of it. There's another aspect of Din Malchus that they were supposed to have covered on Malchus. You have to have covered on Melech, even if Melech is a Melech Rasha. The Rambam quotes this Din in Hilchus Malachim, and he says, the Chazal say, when Moshe Rabbeinu came to Paro, and he said he should let Bnei Yisrael go, so he told them, the end is going to be, you're going to come crawling to me. So he didn't say, you're going to come crawling. He said, V'yorda abadecha eilai lai. Your cabinet members are going to come crawling to me. True to the matter, he meant, you're going to come crawling. And the end of the story was that Parah came begging Moshe Rabbeinu, I set you free. But out of cover to the Malchus, he didn't say, Atatere, I said, V'yorda abadecha eilai lai. And the same thing the Rambam quotes from Eliyahu HaNavi, even though Achav was a Melech Rosho, the Pasuk says, Vaishanis as Mosnov, Eliyahu HaNavi put on his girdle, and it was running in front of Achav to show covet to the Melech, even though he's a Melech Ovid Ovid Azar, he was a wicked Melech. You have to have covet for the Malchus. The Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos, having mispala b'shalom shel Malchus, you have to daven b'shalom shel Malchus, and malim ro'i yishis re'eyu chayim b'loi. The Rishonim ask Akasha, according to the tradition, it's in today's Shir Shal Yom, that Yosef was freed on Rosh Hashanah. Yosef is Yosef in Beis HaSurim on Rosh Hashanah. So they ask Akasha, how can it be? But it says, Vaikalach Vaikhalav Sim Loisov. He shaved, he took a haircut on Rosh Hashanah before he went to see Paro. The Ovis Kodematan Torah volunteered to observe Kol HaTorah Kula. So how come Yosef took a haircut? Why did he shave on Rosh Hashanah? That's what the Rishonim ask Akasha. So they give all kinds of answers. So the Chasam Sofer in the Drasha Salat Torah gives an answer. What do you mean? The Ovis Kodematan Torah weren't mechuyev to observe Rosh Hashanah. It was B'Torah Seinem Mitzvah V'Yosef. It's like a Minig Toiv, Amidas Chasidus. That you don't come into the king all filthy and dirty. That's a real law. You have to show Kavod LaMalchus. Of course you have to shave. Whenever you have a conflict between a real din and a midas chassidus, so you have to observe the real din. The real din, you have to have Kavod for a melech. Of course, Veikalech v'chalas v'mlosav, even on Rosh Hashanah, in such a situation, you don't observe the midah toivah, the midas chassidus of observing Rosh Hashanah. It's interesting that this is what the Chasam Sofer writes in his drushes. There is a biography that covers three generations. It's called the Chutam Shulosh. It covers Rebbe Kiveger and his son-in-law, the Chasam Sofer. Chasam Sofer had three wives, one after the other. So his second wife was the daughter of Rebbe Kiveger. And the third generation it covers is the Ksav Sofer, who was, Chasam Sofer had more than one son, but Ksav Sofer was the son who took over the Rabbanus in Pressburg after Chasam Sofer passed away. And this biography is written by one of the children of the Ksav Sofer. So it's authentic. All the stories there are family stories. So they have there the story when the Chasam Sofer was a young child. On the occasion of his bar mitzvah, he said an original pilpul, original dvater, and he disagreed with something that an alter Zayde had said. He quoted something from the Koses Yeshuas, which is a sefer on the Zikin, by an ancestor of his, and he ripped it apart. He showed that it's wrong, and he gave a different answer on the kash. So the father of the Chasam Sofer was a religious balabas. He didn't know how to learn as well as his son. So he slapped him in public and said, "Pisher, your little boy, what are you arguing with the great-grandfather for? Your chutzpah." At the age of 13, he gets up and he says a whole shtickle Torah. So Rav Nos Nadler was there. That was his Rebbe, the Rebbe of Chasam Sofer in Frankfurt. So he says to the father, "Why did you slap him? The kid is right. The Alter Zayde is wrong." So he told the Chasam Sofer, as a bar mitzvah bracha, "You should leave your father's home." It's a wild piece of history. "You should leave your father's house. You shouldn't go back home." He never went home again. "You should say it by me, because your father's going to slap you. Every time you're going to say Akasha, Ashver Rashi, your father's going to slap you. You're going to say Ashver Taisus, Ashver Rambam. Your father's going to slap you. Apikuris. The only way to develop and learning is to ask Kashas that things don't make sense, and then you have to work it out. Your father was Azaz Frumet. Every time he's going to say something, Ashver Rashi, Ashver Taisus, he's going to slap him on the face." So he left his father's home and never went back. It's a strange parsha in history. So after learning a lot by Rav Nos Nadler, Rav Nos Nadler recommended to him as a teenager, "You should go learn in a different village in Rechnitz by the Or Chodosh." The Or Chodosh is a sefer that used to be popular. I remember when I, Or Chodosh on Psochim. It's a pilpul sefer on Psochim. So I remember when I, in the yeshiva, was learning Psochim 45 years ago, whenever it was, 50 years ago. So my father bought me Or Chodosh. I never used it. I think I looked up one paragraph and that's all. It's still pretty brand new. I still have it at home. I never used it. So it's a pilpul sefer. So the Chasam Sofer, as a teenager, traveled to Rechnitz. Then he sat there for a month, and he didn't enjoy the shiurim, and he went back home. And he was upset. "Why did Rav Nos Nadler send me on this wild goose chase? I should go sit and learn by the Or Chodosh." He didn't enjoy it at all. It wasn't his style. So he was afraid to ask him the kash. So 40 years went by. Chasam Sofer was serving as a rabbi in Pressburg already. So then there was a dintara, two balabatim came for a dintara, and Chasam Sofer gave a psak. One sold merchandise to the other one, and he cheated him with Shaila Vainoa. So they went to the Sanhedrin. Okay, And then Chasam Sofer gave a psak, and he wrote the psak. So the police came and they arrested the Chasam Sofer, because the merchandise that Reuven sold Shimon happened to be brought into the country illegally. It was against the law. They never paid tax for it. And Chassam Sofer signed on the psak means that he's in cahoots with them. Chassam says, I didn't even know what the merchandise was. They just told me in abstract. He sold merchandise to him and charged him so much, and the real price was so much. I gave a psak. I didn't know. So they didn't believe him. They were going to put him in prison. So they had a whole court hearing. So as they're sitting in court, so every court has a policeman to make sure that the guilty guy doesn't shoot anybody. So the policeman in the court just stands there. So he says to the judge, Your Honor, could I say a few words? So the judge says, okay. So he says, I want to ask the rabbi, did he ever live in Rechnitz? So he says, yeah, 40 years ago, I was there for a month. So he says, Your Honor, the man is innocent. He can't be guilty. Why? So he said, I used to be the policeman in Rechnitz, and I used to stand in front of the synagogue, and this young man, this teenager, when he was 14, 15 years old, all the other children made fun of me. No one had respect for the police. No one had respect for the government. The only one who had respect for this Jewish boy used to come every morning and say, Good morning, officer, with such derech eretz for the government. So he says, it's inconceivable that a boy who was 15 years old had such derech eretz for the government, he should now cheat and he should violate the din machus. So he got off the hook. He was potter. So then he realized why the Rebbe had sent him to Rechnitz, that it's going to turn out in the future that the policeman in Rechnitz is going to save his life to testify. So he was a man, the Chassam Sofer was a man, who was very makbed on Kov and Amela. That's why he's the one who writes this teretz on the kasha that the Baalei HaTosfos says, Kachonish, how can Yosef take the haircut on Rosh Hashanah? They always volunteer to observe Kol HaTorah Kula Kodem HaTorah. So he says, what do you mean? That's like a midas chassidus to observe Rosh Hashanah, but it's a real din to show Kov and Amalchus. So of course, Veikalach Veikalev Simlois. Okay, so that's left over from yesterday. That's about Dina and Machus Dina. Someone suggested to me that I should talk about Dina Machus, because whenever anybody goes to Eretz Yisrael, so people always give them along things to take and to smuggle into the country without paying tax. And it's absolutely keneged adin. So that's why I thought it's a good idea. That's why I went through Dina Machus. I'm supposed to speak about Vasisa Yoshev HaTov. Okay? So the Gemara Bav Metzia. Mar Bab and Siya and the Flaman in the days quotes the Pasik Bahidaitalam is a derchashiokabovas a maisa sheya soon. So the Gemara learns that from that. The Gemara quotes a Brisa. The Brisa understands the Pasik to be referring to going Lifnei Meshuas Hadin. Moshe Rabbeinu is supposed to teach Bnei Yisrael to follow Lifnei Meshuas Hadin. Some Rishonim count this as one of the 613 mitzvahs, even if you don't count it as a mitzvah, but still, it's included, somewhere absorbed. You're supposed to volunteer Lifnei Meshuas Hadin. Lifnei Meshuas Hadin is not only in Dini Mominus, it's in Kol HaTorah Kula. A person should always try to go Lifnei Meshuas Hadin in Kashvus and Shabbos and Taras HaMishpacha to observe Midas Chassidus. Is Bezin Koifan Lifnei Meshuas Hadin and Dini Mominus? So then you looked in the Choshe Mishpat Simon Yud Beis, Yud Beis. The last line in the Ramah there, so the Ramah paskins, the Bezin is not Koifa based on the Rosh in Bav Metzia. Where's that Rosh? On Daf, Chof Dal on the base in Bav Metzia. So the Rosh says you're not Koifa, that's a weak paskin. Then the Ramah says, V'yesh Chol Kamod, say you are Koifa, why are you Koifa? Like you Koifa on all the other mitzvahs, so why should Lifnei Meshuas Hadin be different? So that's what a few of you suggested, that's how they say. You only, let's say a fellow doesn't want to eat matzah, so they're going to beat him up till he eats the matzah, and he's crying, he doesn't want to eat the matzah, but he's eating it. So bottom line, he ate the matzah, and he's yotzei the mitzvah. He knows it's a mitzvah to eat matzah, and even though he's crying, he doesn't want to, he's yotzei the mitzvah, fine. But over here, if you're going to pressure him, you're going to force him until he pays the money, then he's not yotzei the mitzvah. Lifnei Meshuas Hadin, you're only yotzei the mitzvah if you do it out of the goodness of your heart. But if you don't do it out of the goodness of your heart, then you're not mekayim the mitzvah. So what are they going to be koy for me to do something which is not a mitzvah? If I don't do it out of the goodness of my heart, I'm not mekayim any mitzvah. This is in the siman about pshara. The whole idea of a pshara is a psak. We said pshara is a psak of lifnei meshuas hadin. So since it's a lifnei meshuas hadin, so the bezin is not koy for am pshara. The Gemara in Sanhedrin and Avov on the base, you have this long passage here in the Mar Mekoymes. So the Gemara quotes three opinions from the Tanoim. The first Tana on the first line says, Rabbi Lezer ben Osher ben Yosef Glili says, Osir Livtzoa. If you come to the Beis Din, they're not allowed to recommend the Pshara. That's in violation of the Torah. Torah says Din. And then he says in the third line, Moshe Rabbeinu said, Yikav Adina Sahar, Moshe Rabbeinu never made a Pshara. Aval Aharon would always make a Pshara. If it's also with Tzosa, why did Aharon make a Pshara? So Tosafot claims because he didn't come to Aharon for a Din Torah. Aharon was a stranger. He would, when he heard people were fighting, he would volunteer on his own, let me make a pshara. So if they didn't come to you asking for din Torah, of course you're allowed to recommend a pshara. But they came to Moshe Rabbeinu, so Moshe Rabbeinu is not allowed to recommend a pshara. That's the opinion of Rabbi Lezer ben Osher Rabbi Yosef Levi. Then the Tanakhama before this line begins, the Tana before that line says that it's muta lipzoya. The next Tana says about 6-7 lines in Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcho Eimer, mitzvah liftsoya. It's a mitzvah to make up shara. What do you mean a mitzvah to make up shara? Here the second line from the bottom of that long passage says, Omar Rab, the din is like Rabbi Yeshua, the korcha mitzvah liftsoya. Then what do you mean? But when he used to come for a din Torah to Rav, he used to offer them, would you like a pshar? Would you like a din? But if you say mitzvah l'tzoya, shouldn't you pressure him? Gemara says, no, that's what it means, mitzvah l'tzoya. Mitzvah means to say you have the option and to recommend that they should make a pshar. But you don't force them to make the pshar. Then the Gemara says, Rabbi Shur Mekorcha says, it's a mitzvah l'tzoya. Tanakhama also said, the one before Ablezer, but not Rabbi Yosef Lili, before this first line, he also says, mutu l'tzoya. Gemara says, that's ikimenayim mitzvah, that's a machlek. Tanakhama holds that it's permissible to suggest the pshara, but you're not mechuyev to. And we pass on halachi, Rabbi Shimon Karcho, that it's a mitzvah to recommend a pshara. What is the idea of pshara? It's a psaka of lifnei mishura sadin. It doesn't mean a compromise between the two, a psaka of lifnei mishura sadin. Rabbi Soloveitchik said that his grandfather, Rab Chaim, once had a din Torah. There was a, in Europe, it was a common practice. Wealthy Jews, even not so wealthy Jews, would have a mishareses, they would have a maid, full-time maid who would work at home. So a Jewish family had a maid. She wasn't so wealthy at all, she was a maid. She had one beautiful piece of jewelry, that's all she had. So once the balabasta was going to a wedding, and she asked if the maid can lend her her beautiful piece of jewelry. So the maid said, fine, why not? She had worked for their family for years and years and years. So she lent her the piece of jewelry, and it was a she'elo. It wasn't bischiris, and the shoyles chayv beyond sin, and the balabasta lost it. It was a gnei b'aveda. It was an aveda. She lost a piece of jewelry. So strictly speaking, the balabasta should have been mechuyev because of a she'elah, shoyles chayv beyond sin, but it was ba'ol avimoy, because the maid was taking care of all of the work in the home. She was cleaning the dishes and washing the laundry and everything. She was taking care of everything. In the middle, when she lent her the piece of jewelry. So, Bala Vima is Pata. So, they came for a din Torah to Rab Chaim. Rab Chaim said that he asked him, would you like to have a din Torah? We'd like to have Pshara. He recommended a Pshara. So, the Balabasta agreed, they'll have a Pshara. So, he said, the Pshara is that you pay in full for the jewelry. The din is that you don't pay a penny because Bala Vima is Pata. Pshara is that you pay 100% against what the din is. So that's because pshara means what Yosha dictates. Yosha dictates the woman is poor and this is the only thing that she has, and she did a nice act of lending it to the balabasta, and they get along with each other and to maintain peace and order. So he said, yeah, and the balabasta can afford it. So Yosha dictates that she shouldn't follow the Torah of Balavim, she should pay the full amount. Oh, okay, so we'll finish tomorrow. So we started pshara. We started with the name of pshara.
Just pshara.
Everybody's going, I'm going somewhere else.